Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, keeping you company today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, we'll get a lesson in decoding the doublespeak of politics from the philosopher comedians who wrote Plato and Platypus Walk Into a Bar. This time, we'll learn about the Texas sharpshooter fallacy and the secret of weasel words. For example, failure is just a success that hasn't happened yet. Well, we'll hear more about that in just a few moments when we're joined by Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein in to talk about their new book, Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington. That's coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, though, we're taking care of some important business. It's Friday, February 15th, and the home stretch of our winter pledge drive. This is your last chance to pledge during Kathleen Dunn's show during the drive, and I know you'll have a great time with our guests, so go ahead and pledge in advance, then you can sit back and enjoy the comedy and philosophy. It's well worth listening to, so it's radio worth supporting. Won't you decide to support Wisconsin Public Radio today with your pledge at any amount? Make your pledge at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And with me in the studio today is Larry Mueller. Hey, Larry, thanks for coming in.
Hi, Veronica. Say, what was that that saying about failure? Failure is a...
a success that hasn't happened yet. I like where you're going with this.
I tell you what, there's no failures during this hour. It's going to be success all of the way with your contribution. And the number to call, 1-800-383-9772. That's 1-800-383-9772. Call in right now with your contribution. If you contribute $120, by the way, we'll be happy to send you a copy of Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington. You know, this reminds me a lot, Veronica, of how I feel during this particular program, because I'm usually getting ready for my show. And then I come on, and I get to hear the last 5 or 10 minutes, and I say, why couldn't I have listened to this program? You know, I can always go online, and I have gone online and listened to the show after the fact because of the great guests. They're always a lot of fun. You do a wonderful job. Kathleen does a wonderful job on this program, and I hope everybody supports this program. And frankly, it's the last chance to contribute, I believe,
during the drive.
During the drive. So, hey, let's get it started. 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772. And I'm pretty sure that after you hear Tom and Daniel talk, you're going to be even more inspired to make your contribution of $120 and get a copy of the book. I would advise doing it right now and avoiding the big rush.
That's right. 1-800-383-9772, the number to call to beat the rush to support Wisconsin Public Radio in this hour. We're looking for $6,000 this hour. That's an expression of confidence in you. We know you love this program. You love listening to Kathleen, and that's why you listen and why you should support Wisconsin Public Radio. We do have a special thank you gift this hour when you support Wisconsin Public Radio at the $120 level. We'll be happy to send you the book, Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington. I read it last night intending to kind of read a bit and skim, and I got sucked in into
the late
hours. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, they mix humor and jokes, but really there's a lot of substance there as they take actual quotes, for example, surrounding the Iraq War and sort of dissect them, say, does this hold up if you look at it from a philosophical angle? And what about humor, too? So really a fascinating read if you want to understand what our politicians are really saying with a bit of levity there, too. So if you pledge at $120, we'll send you out that book and the member benefit card as well. 2-for-1 entrees at over 200 restaurants. So a great package there when you pledge at $120. You'll want to get it started right away by calling us at 1-800-383-9772 or online, WPR.org.
I'm just looking at the book jacket here and reading the Texas sharpshooter fallacy. Shoot first and then draw a target around the bullet hole. You'll get a political bullseye every time. Now, the whole book apparently is filled with these kinds of humorous, and yet there's a certain amount of truth to a lot of what they're saying here. It's funny sometimes, but then you think about it and you say, you know, a lot of that goes on. I tell you what, you're going to love the book. $120 contribution, that's just $10 a month. As a matter of fact, you can put it on your credit card. I usually just write a check when I'm doing it, but you can put it on your credit card, have electronic funds transfer, I believe. Can you do that? You can
That's
do that,
right.
can't you?
Electronic funds transfer. You can write a check and we'll send you a reminder in the mail. There are tons of ways to make your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, but only one way. It begins with you when you decide to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Do it today. Don't wait till the next drive. Do it while you're thinking about it and act on something that you know that conscience maybe is niggling at you a little bit. Maybe you're thinking, I have heard a lot of pledge drives.
Well, and it's time to act right now.
That's right. It is. This is a call to action. Call us at 800-383-9772 and support this program and say thank you, just as Janet in West Bend did, who says, I love listening to the very topics programs about gardening. That's a shout out to you, Larry, and old time radio. So there's a couple of great programs there that Janet from West Bend enjoys. What programs do you enjoy? Is it This Hour, Kathleen Dunn's program that you've made must listen radio? Support it right now with your call, 1-800-383-9772.
And you know, on my program, I've been asking for people who have never contributed before to contribute, and I've been running about 50%. About half of the people who contributed during my show haven't contributed before. And so I'm going to make that challenge out to you right now. If you haven't contributed before, maybe it's been a long time, maybe you've lapsed a little bit, and are just thinking about getting back into it, now would be a great time to start it out. And for, I don't know, $5 a month, that's $60. If it was me, I'd go for the $10 a month for a $120 contribution, because then you can get a copy of the book, Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington. And we'll also send you the member benefit card as well. So you'll have 2-for-1 dining at 230 restaurants across the state, and you'll have bed and breakfast. I think there's 52 bed and breakfasts that offer two nights for the price of one. So there's lots here for that $120 value. And if you've never contributed before, why not do it right now at 1-800-383-9772. You can also go online, and that's easy and quick, at WPR.org. Whatever you do, do it right now.
Thanks a lot for coming in, Larry. We'll be talking to you a little bit more later, too.
I'll come back.
Larry Mueller, folks, and he's urging you to call 1-800-383-9772 to support Wisconsin Public Radio. You'll feel good after you do it. Why not pledge online, if you'd rather, at WPR.org. And we're joined now by the authors of Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington, Understanding Political Doublespeak Through Philosophy and Jokes. And Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein, thank you so much for joining us this
hour. Oh, thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks a lot.
Well, I must say, you guys really had your work cut out for you this time. I mean, admittedly, you kind of need a blowtorch to cut through some of the stuff that comes out of Washington. But you guys managed to do it. What made you want to write about political doublespeak?
Well, you know, we had a prior book, which was actually a bestseller, called Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar. And actually, we appeared on WPR to talk about
that. Kathleen Dunn's program.
On Kathleen Dunn's program. That's exactly right.
In fact, it did so well, we're making a pledge right here on the air.
Oh, I like it.
Put us down for $60.
Nice. Well, thank you very much.
He wants to get the free book. So anyway, after the success of that book, we knew the political season was coming up, and we thought, gee, there has to be an angle here. And what we hit upon was that there are a lot of old Aristotelian logical fallacies described by Aristotle 2,500 years ago that these politicians are still using with great aplomb.
Tell us about one. What is a fallacy, and how do you apply it to political doublespeak?
Okay. Well, fallacy, there are two kinds, formal and informal. And the formal are, you know, little tricky things about logic. But the informal are the ones they use more often. And those range from weasel words, you know, where you change the meaning of a word a little bit, use a little different word to make something sound better, or in the case of your opponent, make it sound worse. Or there's the old tu quoque fallacy, which literally means you too.
We call it so's your mother. That's straight from the Latin.
Yeah, that's the sort of playground wrestling that goes on. You know, well, you're the one that brought up race. No, you're the one that brought up race.
No, it was your husband.
Your mother brought up race.
Sounds like a new breed of yo mama jokes. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then we heard one quite recently from Hillary Clinton. Actually, it's in the Bernstein book about Hillary. And the fallacy is called Mendacium album, which means white lie. You know, it's a special case of weasel words. And apparently Hillary once told a reporter that she got her name because she was named after Sir Edmund Hillary, the man that climbed Mount Everest.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, he climbed Mount Everest in 1953, and when she was born in 1947, he was an obscure beekeeper in New Zealand.
And hadn't been knighted, I don't believe.
And she wasn't likely to be named after an obscure beekeeper, I gather. So there's another one in that same line about Al Gore, where he said his mother used to sing him, and it was a union song that hadn't been written yet.
Yeah, look for the union label.
Right.
And the thing is, if she did sing it to him as a lullaby, she was singing it to him when he was in law school, which raises certain questions, too.
A little bit inappropriate there.
Yeah.
So tell us about, give us some quotes of the book in terms of these fallacies. The book begins with lots of content about the Iraq War and the fancy footwork that was needed verbally to convince others to go to Iraq. Tell us about
right.
some of the quotes there.
Well, there's even a fairly recent one about the Iraq War. This is called the Texas sharpshooter fallacy. That's where you shoot a bunch of holes in the barn door, and then you draw the target around the holes. It's a lot easier to get a bullseye that way. And what it's a metaphor for, obviously, is when you're dealt a bad hand, you try to put the very best face on it. And so you remember back in last February, I think, just as Bush was trying to convince the nation that we needed 20,000 additional troops in Iraq, right then the British decided to pull out 8,000 troops.
Mm-hmm.
So you think, oh, what a devastating blow to the administration. Well, not at all, not if you're a Texas sharpshooter. By the way, it's coincidental that it's called the Texas sharpshooter fallacy. It has nothing to do with the fact that Mr. Cheney, while hunting in Texas, mistook his friend for a pheasant. But in any case, what he said was, well, I look at it and see it's actually an affirmation that there are parts of Iraq where things are going pretty well. So he was trying to pitch it as good news. And nobody had the foresight to ask, well, wait a minute, wouldn't you think an ally would take those 8,000 troops and send them to Baghdad where you're about to add 20,000 troops?
When you talk about it now, it seems so obvious, but I think most of us hear that and think, I guess that's a bit of good news.
Yes. Well, the funny thing is, I mean, another reason why we wrote a book about this topic and using Aristotle and others to kind of demystify some of this talk is often we feel a lot of people will hear a politician or a pundit or some commentator or social scientist say something and we'll say, that doesn't seem right, does it? But we can't put our finger on what's wrong with it. And so we went to our friend Aristotle and found exactly what was wrong with it. And because, as you may know, we're of the philogag, or philogag school of philosophy, which is that every philosophical concept has a good joke lurking behind it.
Sounds pretty sound.
Yeah, that's a very profound thought, actually. And one that sort of applies here is because when Tom talks about the Texas sharpshooter fallacy, that's part of, what is that called in Latin? It's a part of a non causa something?
Non causum pro causum.
Yeah.
Taking something that isn't the cause to be the cause.
Yeah. And in epistemology, you try to figure out, well, how can you know what something is? And there's an old gag about three baseball umpires talking about their work together. And the first one says, well, I call them the way I sees them. And the second one says, I call them the way they are. And the third one says, they ain't nothing until I calls them.
Mr. Cheney's school of thought.
Yes.
You know, you don't reflect reality. You create your own reality.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking this hour with Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein. They're guiding us through the political doublespeak in Washington with their new book, Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington. We'll be back with them in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. In the meantime, I'm hoping you'll join in the conversation this hour. If you have a particular quote you'd like decoded or something you noticed yourself, give us a call and share it at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. 1234 is the number to call or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickard in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After two on Science Friday, a look at the state of the world's oceans, from fish to coral reefs to the effects of global warming. Stay tuned for Science Friday, coming up after two today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickard back with you today, in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network. And we're talking with Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein, the co-authors of the book Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington. You might remember their previous book. It was a bestseller called Plato and Platypus Walk into a Bar. This time they're decoding political doublespeak for us, and we do have an open line for you if you'd like to talk to them and enjoy some decoding. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. And in the meantime, I want to talk about a quote that I liked because it just kind of made my head hurt, and you told me why. This is a quote from Donald Rumsfeld, who said that we do know of certain knowledge that Osama bin Laden is either in Afghanistan or in some other country, or dead. And I thought, well, he's probably right.
Yes. It seems like, actually, when we first looked at it, we thought it was one of those statements that gives you no new information, because those were the only possibilities. But being philosophers, we thought about this long and hard and realized that there was one possibility that he left out. And that is that Osama had never existed in the first place.
And that one might be stretching credibility a bit.
A lot.
Although you do have a topic that does cover that sort of alternate universe sort of doublespeak. You call it the Star Trek, I think, defense there.
Yes. And that is where you think that there are two different paradigms of reality. And one of the famous ones had to do with President Reagan, when do you remember that one, Tom?
Yeah, it was when I've forgotten exactly what the issue was, but he said, "Oh, I know what it was." That he was being accused of trading arms for hostages in the old Iran-Contra controversy, and he said, no, he didn't. And then reporters uncovered the fact that, in fact, there was a memo that said he had. And he said, he went on national television, and he said, "Well, my heart still tells me that I did not, but the facts tell me otherwise." And putting them out there as if those were two equally good ways of looking at it.
And there are people who are able to do this. We read an article while we were writing the book about a creationist a graduate student who was also a paleontologist. And he had identified some early species of a mollusk or something. And he said, well, this one existed 56 million years ago. But then on the other hand, he only thinks that the world had or the universe had existed for 5,000 years, according to the Bible. And when asked, how he reconciled these two things, he said, oh, they're just two different paradigms of the truth.
Hard to fit together there, huh?
Yeah. But, I mean, Aristotle had this law of non-contradiction that you know, you can't. A statement is not true something both can't be and not be at the same time. But I guess there's some people who can hold contradictory ideas in their head at the same time.
Well, we've got a caller on the line here waiting to talk to you. Let's take a call from Daniel in Rice Lake. Hi, Daniel. You're on the air.
Hello. I don't think George Bush has read Immanuel Kant, but my favorite quotation from Bush is, and he said this early in his first about his first year as president, the American people can tell the difference between politics and reality.
Excellent.
Yeah. We had another instance of George Bush showing his Kantian side when he was talking about the issue of stem cell research. And he said, as a principle, I don't think it is right to sacrifice human life in order to save human life. Kant said, that's fine. If that's your principle, then it has to be able to be applied to all instances. But, of course, in the instance of executing people as a preventative of, or a deterrent of other people committing murder, he was all for execution. So he was not a consistent Kantian. He was just kind of a Sunday Kantian.
It must be incredibly hard, though. I have to say I have a little bit of sympathy for the politicians here because they are articulating these dense ideas across the board. And it would require a master elocutor or just maybe a philosopher not to get tangled up at some point.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we do have a little sympathy, particularly since we've been doing a lot of radio shows, because we often get tied up in our own words, too.
Is there someone that you think does this really well, is able to avoid the doublespeak and still make eloquent points?
I don't know about eloquence, but and I must say, just personally, I'm not a fan of his politics, but John McCain... Usually, you know, when you look at his utterances, his statements, they aren't baloney.
He really is a straight talker.
You know, and there is some content there. It's just that what he's for is not always what I'm for. In fact, it's rarely what I'm for. But in terms of baloney, he's pretty clean.
And what about someone who's the exact opposite, someone you had piles and piles of material on?
Well, but... go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to say that could be any number of people, including some recent presidents.
Who shall remain nameless?
Rumsfeld was a master of it, I must say, because the former Secretary of Defense, because he was so articulate and apparently did know philosophy pretty well himself. And he would trick us by saying something that on the face of it philosophically was true, but then he'd sneak in something that made no sense, like the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Oh, God, that was beautiful. And it's true up to a point, because after a while, the absence of evidence kind of, you know, anybody sensibly, including a scientist, will say, geez, well, we haven't seen any pixies with earrings lately, so we're going to kind of decide that they don't exist.
You know, that reminds me, I don't know if you guys hang out much at Renaissance fairs, but when I was growing up, I did. And I remember a comedy duo who had the unsavory name of Puke and Snot, but they had a... they're very funny. They had a T-shirt that they printed based on one of their comedy routines that said, "He who shall, so shall he who."
And I love it.
It sounded so profound.
Yeah.
But it meant absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Rumsfeld quote kind of reminds me of that, although in this case it does make more sense. But,
exactly, yeah. Another famous one, of course, was there are known knowns, and there are known unknowns, and there are unknown unknowns.
Yeah.
And when you thought about it, you thought, well, okay, I sort of get that. But by that time, he had fogged your mind completely.
Yeah, and then he could toss in the ringer, which is what he'd do.
Well, another category that you talk about in the book is, you call them weasel words. We've touched a little bit about this. And you write about Frank Luntz, a Republican consultant, who has written an entire book about what words to use when you don't really want to say what exactly it is you're talking about. One example would be electronic intercepts. That's preferable to saying wiretapping. Tell
exactly,
us about
yeah.
some more of those.
Yeah, well, the one we've just heard recently in the last few weeks, as the torture issue has come up again, is alternative interrogation procedures instead of torture.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there are famous ones, too, where you pillory your opponent by using a weasel word that makes it more negative. So, for example, the Republicans say that the Democrats are not in favor of the inheritance tax. They're in favor of the death tax.
Yeah, and there have been weasel words warfare. Does anybody remember when somebody was pro-abortion and anti-abortion? Those categories don't exist anymore. You're either pro-choice or anti-life.
That's kind of like exploring for energy instead of drilling for oil.
Exactly. You
yeah.
got it. You
yeah.
got it.
Those are interesting. Now, do you, when you listen to politicians now, are you catching them on this, or do you still have to think pretty hard?
Still have to think pretty hard, actually, yeah, because some of them are very facile at it.
Yeah, and also we're very old and think slowly.
I don't buy that. Well, we've got an open line for you right now to call in and talk with Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein about their book, Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington. Have you been noticing political doublespeak? Have you been catching it, or has it been sneaking by you? And maybe you've got a favorite example you'd like to share. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. And there are a couple of John Stewart quotes in this book. I gather you two are fans?
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
There's one that I especially liked. It reads, this again goes back to the war on Iraq, and he was reporting on the president. It reads, yesterday the president met with a group he calls the Coalition of the Willing, or, as the rest of the world calls them, Britain and Spain.
Yes.
Yeah, I have to say, Coalition of the Willing sounds pretty great, but when you think about
exactly.
just Britain and Spain.
Yeah. There's a school of philosophy, a recent and still current one, called linguistic analysis, you know, to take words. They decided that what philosophy, all philosophical problems could be understood and answered or not, by understanding exactly what the words meant. And this was a British school. And so we think that John Stuart, was a proponent of linguistic philosophy.
Hmm. Wonder what his training is. Well, we'll go now to Julie. We've got a phone call. That's a loud phone.
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'll just hang on. Okay, there we go. Julie in Menominee is on the line. Hi, Julie. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I enjoy your program so much.
Great.
I guess I just want to make a comment. You've talked about political over-talking or double-talking. Today, so many people are aware of it. Why do the politicians still try to do it?
Isn't that interesting? Just before you called, we were talking about the fact that that's a question that we've been getting at almost every appearance. Why do they do it? You know, like, if it's so, particularly now in the 24-hour news cycle, because sometimes a remark can slip by us when you only hear it once. Now you hear it 58 times. And by about number 46, everybody is going, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. So to tell you the truth, we don't know.
No, I mean, take the example that we talked about earlier of Hillary Clinton saying that she was named after Sir Edmund Hillary. You know, anybody could find out that she must be prevaricating, although somewhat innocently in terms of, you know, the damage it causes, by saying that she was named after him. But they could find out there in a minute that it just ain't necessarily so. It ain't true. Why would she go ahead and do it? And I think that, you know, people feed them these lines and they start to believe them. I sometimes do that myself, I have to confess. You know, sometimes I'll have a little story about myself, and as I tell it, I start to embellish it, and embellish it to the point where it's pure fiction, and I'm starting to believe it at that point.
Well, it's sort of the James Frey effect, because you tell a truth that isn't true, but it's false. You've embellished it, like you just said, but it becomes what you think is a better representation of what the truth is.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, you said that very well. Can we quote you?
Sure you can. I only charge a small fee.
Okay, good.
All right, let's go on. Thanks for that call, Julie. Here is Mark in Rising Sun. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. You got a joke to share?
Oh, yeah, you said that every philosophy has a joke with it. Rene Descartes is in a bar at closing time, and the bartender asks him if he will have another one, and Rene Descartes says, I think not, and disappears.
Exactly.
But you were talking about political doublespeak, and I've always listened to, you know, the news, and every time there's some new program, they come up with some great name for it. You have Iraqi Freedom, and you have Clear Skies Initiative, and I just think that one day, you know, they're going to have to, you know, bury a bunch of plutonium somewhere, and they'll have to call it something like, you know, free kittens for blind kids or something.
Exactly.
No, that is the direction. Calling things by their exact opposite.
Yeah, it's inversely proportionate to the badness of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
One phenomenon we've noticed is that conservatives seem to be better at this than liberals. You know, there was a book came out a few years ago that suggested, by a linguist actually from Berkeley, that and he was a liberal, suggesting that, new names for things, because Karl Rove was so good at it on the other side. And so he said, well, you know, instead of activist judges, we should call them freedom judges. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. That doesn't ring. You know,
Freedom Fries did better than
freedom
that.
Freedom Fries did better. It's amazing, though, how often the techniques work. I mean, when you're talking about exploring for energy instead of drilling for oil, that sounds so positive. And if I'm not thinking really hard, I'm not going to catch that.
Exactly right.
Yeah, the one that to turn something around, inheritance tax then became death taxes. And boy, nobody wanted to be for death taxes. Yuck.
Right. That's one. When you bring out death, it's hard to go anywhere from there.
Yes. Although that is the subject of our next book, but we won't go there.
Well, we'll be talking to you next time about that, I'm sure, too. But in this book, you've got another one about reframing the debate where, you know, for instance, you're supposed to be talking about a particular subject and then the politician in question can get up and say, I'm happy to talk about Iraq as long as we don't talk about the surge or the troops or how long we'll be there, or, you know, you sort of make it to exclude the very subject.
Yeah, right, exactly.
We find that works well around the house, too, you know. Honey, let's have a serious talk about our marriage. However, money, infidelities, and what we eat is off the table.
That's a good technique. Now that you know all these techniques, do you find yourself wanting to employ them?
Oh, I wish we could. I wish we were smart enough to do it easily.
Oh, no. No, that's not the reason, Tom. It's because we're men of principle.
Oh, okay.
Remember?
Okay.
Remember?
Let's go back to the phones. Here is a call from Tim in Washburn. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. This is a great show. I love it.
Great. Thanks.
I heard on the news this morning about President Bush giving a speech yesterday somewhere, and he was talking about the promising economic outlook in Africa, and you know, talking about his visit to Africa. And I think his speech, his double talk, was about exploration for oil in Africa, not recognizing what it's actually doing to the African continent.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Some people have commented about our book, Aristotle and Aardvark, that we don't take President Bush to task more for double talk. But he did present a special case problem for us, looking at it through the philosophical lens, and that is for something to be deconstructed to the point where you can find illogic in it, it has to make some kind of syntactical sense in the first place. And a lot of his failed that test. We'd look at it instead of saying, aha, that's a distinction without a difference, or that fails the falsifiability test. We just went, huh?
We're talking this hour with Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein, co-authors of the book Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington, Understanding Political Doublespeak Through Philosophy and Jokes. If you'd like to join in our conversation this hour, we hope you will, and tell us what you've picked up on as far as doublespeak goes. Share a joke or a quote if you want to. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickard, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Wisconsin Public Radio, stay tuned for Larry Mueller, who will be talking gardens after 11 o'clock. It's Garden Talk today, as Larry's guest tells you how you can grow more vegetables on less land than you ever thought possible. The guest is John Jevons, Director of Ecology Action, which promotes biointensive growing. I'm Veronica Rickard, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with the authors of the book Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington. Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein are guests today. And let's go back to the phones now, take a call from James in Oconto. Hi, James, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I called because it's a very entertaining program today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And, but I thought there had been some question as to why politicians do this, why they persist on this. And I thought your guest might talk about the tradition of sophistry and Aristotle's rhetoric and that sort of thing, as to put this in kind of a philosophical context.
Well, one thing I could say is that when the way I understood the, Aristotle's rhetoric, he saw it as the art of persuasion. And, it, and just by calling it an art, he's suggesting that it has some value. But the word rhetoric now, I mean, let's say in the current campaign where the candidate Obama is accused of being just rhetoric, with the suggestion that there's nothing concrete there, there's no content, the word has taken on a different meaning.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, James, you mentioned the sophists, and both Aristotle and Plato took them to task because they used rhetoric in lieu of sound reasoning. And I think the positive spin that Aristotle tried to put on his own treatment of rhetoric was it's fine to use rhetorical devices to enhance your argument and to make it more persuasive and so forth, but to use it in lieu of sound thinking is basically what the sophists were doing.
Oh, that's a good distinction, Tom.
Thank you.
Right.
I had Tom around to take my vague ideas and make them clear.
You're a good pair.
Yes.
How about we move on to Rose now in Arbor Vitae. And James, by the way, I hope that answered your question. Hi, Rose. You're on the air.
Hi. To me, one of the biggest double talk is when we talk about gross national product, because you can have a number of billionaires that make the whole country look like they're doing better, and you can have numerous people, you know, the majority of the people, very, very poor.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. No, the way that one can lie with statistics, particularly in post hoc arguments, it's just phenomenal. It's, you know, you throw a number out there, and people are so, you know, impressed by just the precision of the number that they don't realize what it stands for. One thought that I give to that we give in the book to the idea of you know, what kind of numbers we pay attention to in terms of the economy derives from a joke that I would like to tell if I can, Veronica.
Oh yeah, go for it.
It's an old one, but it's about a guy who goes out for in the evening to walk his dog, and he sees his neighbor down on his hands and knees under a street lamp. And he says to his neighbor, "What you doing?" He says, "I'm looking for my car keys. I dropped them here this morning." The guy with the dog says, "There?" And he says, no, I didn't lose them here. I lost them over there behind the bushes, but the light is better here." and we find that, like, the daily reports on the economy come from the big board at the New York Stock Exchange. That tells us the state of the economy. And the light's very good in there at the stock trading room. But where the light is not as good is the number of people who drop below poverty level. Those figures don't come out on a daily or hourly basis the way the New York Stock Exchange numbers do.
Thanks for that call, Rose. And let's take one more from Bill in Two Rivers. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've been carrying around in my wallet and on my desk a little verse that I think pertains to the subject matter that's now on the air. Should I read it?
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Never fear big, long words. Big, long words mean little things. All big things have little names, such as life, death, fear, and war, or dawn, day, night, hope, love, and home. Learn to use little words in a big way. It's hard to do, but they say what you mean. When you don't know what you mean, use big words. That often fools little people. I don't know who wrote that. I picked it up in the library in college about 50 years ago, and carried it around ever since.
Well, I'm wondering if there aren't a lot of politicians who have that in their wallets.
Just the last part, I think.
Yeah, just the last part. The first part was pretty inspiring there. What do you think? Is that a good rule of thumb for an honest politician, at least the first part of the quote?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, in fact, the reason we do have long words usually are to refine the meaning, like the English language. If you take a look at English language dictionary, it has many more words in it than, let's say, a Spanish dictionary, which has fewer just words in the vocabulary. And the reason for it is that there are more words in the genesis of that is because more languages came to form English than came to form Spanish. But I believe I'm right. But some of the long words just cut it very thin, so you can be more specific. So that would be an exception to the rule of that little bit of doggerel.
Well, Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein, I thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to leave us with one more joke?
Sure. Okay, which one? Which one should we do, Tommy?
How about the cake joke?
Oh, I like that joke.
This is a joke, Veronica, about the hazards of telling a white lie.
Okay.
Okay. This woman woke up at the last minute to the fact that she was supposed to supply a cake for the church bake sale. And she didn't have time to get one together. She didn't have the ingredients. And so she thought, geez, I got to do something. So she thought, well, maybe I can make something look like a cake, and then I can send my daughter down first thing in the morning to buy this fake cake before anybody else has a chance to. So she looks around the house, and she says, well, how about a roll of toilet paper? So she takes a roll of toilet paper, and she puts frosting on it, sends it down to the church bake sale, and her daughter goes down the next morning to try to buy it. And she calls her mom, and she says, oh, I hate to tell you, but she said somebody got here before I did and bought the cake. So the woman feels terrible. She's very frightened of what the repercussions of this are going to be. Later that day, she goes to a luncheon at the home of the wife of the mayor. And after the meal, the dessert is brought out, and she looks up, and to her horror, the dessert is this roll of toilet paper with frosting on it. And she's totally mortified, and she thinks, well, there's no choice but to stand up and confess. So just as she's pushing her chair back, somebody else who's at the luncheon says, oh, what a beautiful cake. And the mayor's wife said, oh, thank you, I made it myself.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate the laughs and the wisdom this morning. It's been fun.
Thank you, Veronica.
All right.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thomas,
bye-bye.
And thank you for the pledge as well. Daniel Cathcart and Daniel Klein, co-authors of Aristotle and An Aardvark Go to Washington, Understanding Political Doublespeak Through Philosophy and Jokes. That was a fantastic hour. I laughed a lot. I know you did, too. It was hard not to. So that's worth a pledge. You know, every time you can laugh in life, it's worth a little something. And this time, it's worth supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going for $6,000 this hour. We have about 2,500 of that, so there's a ways to go. But we do thank you for all of your calls so far. Why not call now and become a member at 1-800-383-9772 or pledge online, WPR.org. And I'm joined with Larry Mueller again. Larry, thanks for coming back.
Oh, I'm still chuckling. Did they tell the story of the campaign workers at campaign headquarters?
I don't think so.
Well, in the book, there's this. There are two campaign workers looking over a speech, and one says to the other, it's a good speech. It just needs a couple of points of obfuscation. I tell you what, we don't need any of that here. We need some direct talk with you, and we'll use some plain, simple, straightforward words like, love, do you love Wisconsin Public Radio? Do you appreciate the kind of programs that you hear between 10 and 11 o'clock? I hope you do. There's some wonderful shows. And today, Tom and Dan and their book, Aristotle and Aardvark Go to Washington, is a wonderful book. And for a $120 contribution, $10 a month if you want to do it that way, it's yours. We have a goal of $6,000 for this hour. I'm not sure how far along we are, but Veronica will tell us that. But I know we haven't made it yet. We can, though, with your help at 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772, or go online to WPR.org. And I just want to make a special mention to those of you who have never contributed before, because if you've never contributed before, what a great time to do it. Spend $120, you become a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio gang, and we'll send you a copy of the book, and we'll send you the member benefit card so you can have 2-for-1 dining.
A lot of bang for your buck this hour by becoming a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. At the $120 level, I guarantee Aristotle and An Art of Art Go to Washington will keep you entertained. And I loved that it was funny and it made me laugh, but I also loved that it made me think. And that's what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. We do both sides of the coin there. We don't just sit there with our brow furrowed. We also like to laugh. And you do too. So this is a great morning to call if you love laughing and you've laughed because of Wisconsin Public Radio. Become a member at 1-800-383-9772. We've raised over $2,600 so far this morning, and we're going for $6,000 this hour. You can make it happen with your call at 1-800-383-9772. And Rhonda Fanning is back here from the production booth. Hi,
Good
Rhonda.
Morning, Veronica. Thanks.
Good morning.
Let's go out with a bang here on Kathleen's last hour during this pledge drive and thank her for not only all the shows that she's done about the politics, the election. We went to the Iowa caucuses. We've had shows that's focused on what are these delegates, how does the Iowa caucuses work, but for all the times that she's made you laugh, and this is just show is just so indicative of that. So please call now. There's just a few minutes left to pledge for Kathleen's show, and that number is 800-383-9772, or you can go online to WPR.org, and for a pledge of $120 this hour, you're going to get a copy of Aristotle and Aardvark, and I was reading it last night and with some friends who were studying, and I was probably annoying, and they wanted me to leave the room because I kept reading passages out loud from that. I'd be like, okay, this is the last one, I swear, and then I would turn the page, and I'd be like, well, one more. And so it's just a great book, and I think a lot of people are going to have fun with it. You can pass it around to friends and family, and that number again is 800-383-9772.
Or go online to WPR.org. If you haven't contributed yet, we're asking you to call in. How many people have we, how many new people do we have here so
far? We've
got
5 new callers and 19 total calls.
All right, so that's about a third or thereabouts, or a fourth, I guess, of the number of people who've called in, have contributed or are contributing for the first time. What about you? If you haven't contributed yet, this would be an easy way to get in. I'll tell you what, you get a great premium here in Aristotle and in Aardvark Go to Washington. I love the title of that book. And I'll tell you another thing. I've already set aside a few stories from here that I fully intend to use down the road with friends, or maybe even in a speech or two that I sometimes have a chance to give some talks. And I'm probably going to be using a couple of those, a couple of the comments from the book. You can too, and even if you don't have to use it in that way, you're going to really enjoy sitting down and reading the book. And you know, take it with you to a restaurant, and take it with you to one of those restaurants that's that has 2-for-1 dining in our member benefit card. Take somebody along with you. You go 2 for the price of 1. You've got the book. What more could be better? Call us now, 1-800-383-9772. Go online to WPR.org. Don't waste any time, because there's only 5 minutes left in the program, so it's your last chance to get a copy of the book. I can tell you that right
Aristotle
now.
Aristotle and An Aardvark would also be a fantastic gift to share with the young person in your family, a child, a grandchild. You could go through it together, laugh a lot, and then sort of pay attention as you're watching the presidential race and call them on it. See if you can call the Texas sharpshooter fallacy or the weaselly words. Pay attention. It'll help your little one become a better citizen and a better, more informed voter, too. But it's a lot of fun along the way, too. It's the best way. A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, and there's a lot of sugar here. And on Wisconsin Public Radio, that's why you keep listening to Wisconsin Public Radio day in and day out. We're here for you, and we're hoping you're going to be here for us this hour and during this pledge drive by supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, helping us raise $6,000 at 1-800-383-9772. Say thank you to Rhonda Fanning and Kathleen Dunn and Carmen Jackson. 1-800-383-9772.
And this hour, just a couple of minutes left for something as easy as $10 a month. You can make that call, become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, get this great book in the mail, get your Wisconsin Public Radio membership card in the mail, go out, start using it. It's going to pay for itself in no time. For $10 a month, there's not many things that in this world that you're allowed to put a price on yourself and say what's that worth to you. Mostly, you know, you get bills in the mail and everyone sets the price for you. But for Wisconsin Public Radio, we allow you to put the value on this type of programming. So please call the next couple of minutes to say thank you to Kathleen Dunn for all the work that she's done for Wisconsin Public Radio and the hours of programming that she brings you each week. 800-383-9772 is that phone number, or you can log on to our website at WPR.org.
I was just looking at the book, and Tom is has his major in philosophy at Harvard. He worked with street gangs in Chicago, and he dropped in and out of divinity school with that kind of a background. The guy's got a great background for writing a book like this. I can tell you that for free. It's a wonderful book, and I hope you'll call in now with your contribution, because there's only a few minutes left, 2-3 minutes. Why not? You know, have you been thinking about it? This is kind of the last day to be thinking about it, pledging to Wisconsin Public Radio. If you haven't done it yet on Kathleen's program, you're not going to have a chance to do it during this drive. And it's also the last chance to get a copy of Aristotle and an Aardvark. So I hope you'll call in now with your contribution. Only takes a minute or two. You can put it on your credit card if you want to, or just write a check, or electronic funds transfer. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but you decide what to give. You listen to this station, you listen to this program. This is listener-supported radio, and we're just asking you now to help us pay for this service that you use. And you, believe it or not, cover about a third of our costs, operating costs. So call in now with your contribution before the program ends at 1-800-383-9772 or go online to WPR.org.
A couple of minutes left in the hour, just a couple to go. We're still looking to raise $3,000. We're a bit over halfway there. Your call can make a huge difference to us this morning, and if you decide to pledge at the $120 level, we'll be sending you Aristotle and an Aardvark Go to Washington. And when you pledge at $120, we'll also send you our member benefit card, 2-for-1 dining deals across the state, hundreds of restaurants there for you to pick from. But whatever the amount, we are grateful and happy to have you on board as a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. You pick the amount and how you'd like to make your pledge, but feel good about becoming a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. We really do thank you for your support. And Larry and Rhonda, thank you so much for being
here.
Thank
you, and thanks to everyone who's pledged this week.
I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.